As the new school year starts, our linguist Jeff Nunberg has been thinking about youth slang and how adults try to keep up with it.
What are we up to by now, Gen Z? It's September, and the registration lines at colleges are filling up with a new freshman of the class of, are you ready for this, 2003. By way of helping its faculty get their heads around that number, Beloit College has assembled its annual list of how students born in 1981 differ from their elders in their frame of reference. For them, John Lennon and John Belushi have always been dead, the musical Cats has been on Broadway all their lives, and Yugoslavia has never existed. And the students have replied with their own list of things that they know about that their elders don't: trapper keepers, teeny yothers, wax on, wax off. Of course, you could have made lists like this for any generation in the past. Still, there's one thing that does make the class of 2003 different from earlier generations. They've never known what it was like to be young in an age when older people didn't hang on their every word. What brought this to mind was a piece in The New Yorker a few weeks ago about a pair of young marketing consultants who specialize in taking corporate clients on guided tours of the youth culture of New York's outer boroughs. They'll take a group of Ford executives from Detroit, say, and give them a quick immersion course. They warn them off wearing dock shoes and pink polo shirts, and they teach them a little current slang, use whack to mean bad and dope to mean good. Then they all go off to visit hip-hop stores and pass out free CDs to lure kids into stopping to talk about their language, their fashion, and, by, the brands they like. The tour has evidently become the latest hot ticket in the world of marketing. The kids in the class of 2003 may find it surprising to know that there was a time when this would have been considered a pretty weird thing to do. For the last 300 years, it's been a part of the natural course of getting older that at a certain age you stop using your own slang and start deploring the slang and habits of the next generation. Jonathan Swift condemned the slang of the young fops of his period as barbarous mutilations. The Victorians like to compare slang to a pestilence. Around 1850, Dickens' friend George Sala described it as sewerage. And 50 years later, another writer compared the fashions and slang of young people to the mud and slime that is brought to the surface by the stir of the lower life from the saloon in the gutter. By the 20th century, older people had begun to lighten up a little on youth and its language, but they were still pretty critical. H.L. Mencken ridiculed flapper slang and described the flapper as a young and foolish girl full of wild surmises and inclined to revolt against the precepts of her elders. And 30 years later, the culture of 50s rock and roll evoked reactions that ranged from hysteria to comic ridicule. Frank Sinatra was quoted in the San Francisco Examiner as calling rock and roll the martial music of sideburn delinquents all over the earth. I have my doubts as to whether he actually uttered those very words, but there's no question he shared the sentiment. Another critic deplored the tendency of white youth to adopt a slang full of coarse Negro phrases. And on a lighter note, Steve Allen did a regular shtick on his weekly comedy show, giving poetic readings of the lyrics to rock and roll songs like Ramalama Ding Dong, a song that was by the Edsels, whose name presumably had no endorsement from the Ford management of that period. It's hard to pick the exact moment when all of this invective started to wind down. Some people would point to the Beatles and Dylan, when the language, music, and culture of young people began to appeal to a general audience. Or maybe the turning point came a little earlier than that, in 1961, when Joey D. and the Starlighters released Peppermint Twist and middle-aged New Yorkers began to line up outside the doors of the Peppermint Lounge. Or you could pick the year 1968, when Hair opened on Broadway. It took a while for the tirades to die out, of course. In the 60s, there were still people denouncing the twist as a jungle dance, and people said similar things about the dress and language of Woodstock a few years later. In the end, though, all these condemnations were doomed to fade away under the benign tolerance of market capitalism. You can still find people who deplore the way kids dress and talk nowadays, but it's a safe bet they don't work for Ford or Nike or The Gap. It has to leave you feeling a little sorry for those kids who are lined up at the college registration desks. Whatever they wear, whatever they say, there's no one left to scandalize. There's no style they can come up with that the marketers can't appropriate, repackage, and sell back to them with an air pump in the tongue. There's nowhere to hide when Microsoft and Motorola are all over them hawking cool stuff. Maybe that's why today's young people have been driven to tattoos, piercing, and general self-mutilation. At least those aren't signs you can stick a brand on.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist at the Xerox Palo Alto Research Center.